Hey, welcome to Max Man Cave Chats, Episode 7. Today, I'm fortunate to have U.S. Army Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel retired Scott Mann, the writer and lead actor of the play Last Out. Such a great, great story. And I also have my friend, Command Sergeant Major retired Brian Knight from the 82nd Airborne Division. We were able to watch Last Out right before this and talk about it, and man, it is amazing. You're going to love it. So this is my seventh installment of Max Man Cave Chats, and I'm beyond excited. This one is really cool because I got to sit here with a brother of mine I'm about to introduce him, but I got to watch the play Last Out, and we literally just watched it, and we're going into the podcast. And thankfully for us, we have Scott Mann on here, the writer of the play Last Out, retired Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel. Awesome guy, really trying to do a lot of stuff in the veteran community. And I'll let him, talk to you guys a little bit more about himself. But I also want to introduce my buddy, my brother. We've been together like forever. We're old 82nd guys. We were command sergeants majors together. Now he works in the nonprofit realm. You guys know I do a lot of nonprofit stuff, but he hit me up about this and was like, have you seen Last Out? And I was like, no. He's like, dude, we got to watch it. And then he was like, hey, let's do a dude date. I kind of like that term. So we decided to do a dude date here in the man cave. And fortunately for me and you guys out there, he knows Scott well and was able to contact him and get us all together, and now we can talk about Last Out, but we can also talk about what I always try to talk about is being transparent in this veteran community and about real stuff, and just three real guys sitting here talking to you guys who actually really give a crap about you. So with that said, Scott, I'd love for you to introduce yourself and go from there.
Yeah, thanks, Mac. Thanks for having me on. Brian, good to see you, brother. All I would say is that for me, being in the Army and being a Green Beret was something I wanted to do since I was like 14 years old. It was something I almost can't remember not wanting to be in Special Forces. I grew up in a little logging town in Mount Ida, Arkansas, like population 1,000, and this Green Beret popped into our soda shop one day when I was a little kid, man. And, to visit his dad who owned the place, and he was decked out and all that regalia and the jump boots. And I just remember thinking, man, that's what I'm going to do. I had no clue what it was he did, but I just knew it was that I was going to be like that guy. And, it never changed for me. Once he explained to me what Green Berets do and what their mission is of working by, with, and through Indigenous people and everything that goes with it, I was hooked. Like, that, everybody kind of has a different calling, I believe, that they just feel led to do. And that's what I feel led to do. And I got to run with some of the best damn NCOs and warrant officers that I just ever knew in my life. And it was, I always say I got to stand on the shoulders of giants. And I told my three boys at my retirement, I looked at them and I said, I pray that, at the end of your life or at the end of your run, that you'll be able to say you did what you dreamed of doing. And that, for me, that was what that was. And when I got out, I had a pretty rough transition. It didn't really go well. It's like, what do you do when you've achieved your dream at 40 or 41, then what, and that then what became a really bad thing for me. I think that, I left so quickly, I found myself almost like I had changed planets. And even though on the outside things looked good, I had a good job as a contractor. My family was still intact. I was relatively young. Inside things were falling apart pretty damn quick. And, I found myself pretty much ready to check out, and not for the grace of God, I would have, And it was after that, slowly, that I started to figure out that it had a lot to do with purpose and it had a lot to do with my story. and had some mentors come along in my life at the right time to show me that. And again, you know, no credit that I can take for it. I started to figure out that those two things are inextricably linked. And when I started to get my head around that, and I started to see the power of storytelling, and I just fell in love with storytelling as a writer, as a playwright, as an actor, a speaker, whatever. Any way that I could tell the stories of my brothers, particularly those who didn't come home, and the families who loved them and supported them, that was what I committed myself to do. And that's how our nonprofit, The Hero's Journey, that helps warriors tell their story, and this play came to be.
That's amazing, brother. Like we talked about yesterday, we need more of this in our community. But before we get into it, because I got a couple questions for you, but I want to get Brian Knight here, Command Sergeant Major, retired, to introduce himself real quick, and then we'll just talk.
Yeah, for the most part, Mac just introduced me.
I'm
just here connecting two great people to tell a great story. So spent 16 of my 23 years at Fort Bragg. That's for you, Grant Strayer. Spent my majority of my career here. Went into the nonprofit world. I'm working with a nonprofit that supports our active duty service members. And 2019, one of my former soldiers, he wasn't actually mine, he was attached to me while we were deployed to Haiti for the earthquake. Brian Bachman, who's Scott knows really well, is one of the actors in the play Last Out, Elegy of a Green Beret. And so in 2019, he gave me a call and said, "Hey, we're coming to Bragg. Like, can you help us spread the word?" And he gave me just a quick synopsis of what the play was and said, really could use your help. And I was like, "Okay, no problem, brother." So started trying to get the word out. And then it wasn't until I went to see the play, and I was giving out tickets, beefing it up, talking it, had seen the short previews that you guys did, Scott, the TED talk that you did, which was great. And the curiosity, it's the scars, right? Curiosity of scars. Generosity of scars. And the piece that, Ted Brokaw, right? Is that who it was? I think it was.
Yeah. Brokaw.
Had done. And I was just like, "Oh yeah, this is something cool. I think it's a story that definitely, needs to be told. Let me spread the word." And then I went and seen it, and then I was completely floored. You guys did an amazing job creating that and telling the story. It touches and dances on so many different things in a service member's career, between family, between children, your buddies, the whole nine yards. And I just want to commend you on doing such a great piece. And then super excited for you guys on what you're going to announce here today, and really hope to gain even more interest in getting people to watch the movie. So you want to talk about that real quick, Scott?
Yeah. So, the reason I wrote the play Last Out, Elegy of a Green Beret, and really anybody that's watching this or listening to this, what I'll tell you, and I think Mac and Brian would agree, the subtitle is Elegy of a Green Beret, which an elegy is a lament for the dead, right? That's what that is. But I think you'll see very quickly, this is every warrior's story, and it's every family member's story. The context is from, an SF team sergeant's perspective, but there is nothing unique in terms of what he experiences that has not been experienced by every combat infantryman and every combat trooper on the planet in some form or fashion. And that became very, very clear to me very, very fast as I wrote this thing. The reason that I wrote it, though, was that, I had already been a storyteller. I had done a couple TED Talks. I'd spoken from the stage. And what struck me was when my oldest boy came to me and he said, "Dad, I want to go in the Army. I want to run your path. I want to be a Green Beret." The way that hit me was not necessarily what you would expect. I mean, it was not, I'll be honest, like when I left the military, there were some things I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like where things were going. And I consciously stepped away, and I make no apologies for that. And I'm thinking, okay, most of the world country doesn't even know we're at war. And my kid's going to go, you know, he's going to go fight for, frankly, a lot of people that are bashing the shit out of each other right now. And don't even know we're in combat, you know, and I had a problem with that. I had mixed feelings. I was proud of him, but my bigger thing was, Brian and Mac, was like, I don't feel like people, you know, it's just thank you for your service. And it's kind of empty. And it's because some folks don't know what to say. And I just didn't feel like there was a visceral understanding of what it meant for to send our warriors to combat and for their families who endure it. Not once, not twice, but day after day, month after month. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, man, all the movies are about the first in. It's about the SEALs that kick the door or the Rangers that jump onto the airfield. And I got, look, nothing but respect for that. 12 Strong was the first Green Berets in. But all the movies are about the first in. You never hear about the last out. You never hear about those men and women that go day after day, month after month, year after year. And I'm like, my kid was 3 when the towers fell, and now he wants to go be in the infantry. And I'm like, holy crap, you know. So I decided, what if we could tell a story from the stage about those people, the ones that no one really knows who they are. They don't have a voice and they endure so much. What if we could tell their story? And so what I did, Mac, was I decided to take all of the experiences that I could muster from my own journey, but also 3 team sergeants who didn't make it back, who were mentors of mine, and roll them into one composite character. And even the names reflected those guys, Master Sergeant Danny Patton. And, you know, and Danny is killed in the first scene of the play. That really doesn't give anything away. And he spends the rest of his life or the rest of the story trying to ascend to Valhalla, but he's holding on to something and he can't let go. And his buddies, known as operators, come back from Valhalla, and they take him through the different phases of his life and become the characters who made his heart pump the most blood so that he can figure out what he's holding on to and let go. And I figured if we could do that and we could have combat veterans and military family members play those characters, then we could put the audience through a 90-minute white knuckle roller coaster that would give them no choice but to go to the airfield with Danny, to hold his friend in his final moments, to see his son tell him what he wants to do with his life, and just sit in it, just friggin' sit in it. And then you can't move away from it, you know? And,
yeah. No, you're not sitting though, Scott. I caught myself. So Mac, I've seen it twice now. Mac got a chance to see it just a minute ago. I was sitting in that chair and I could not stop moving the entire time.
Same. I was so like on edge.
When you say white knuckle, but man, you know, there were tears even now, you know, watching. I didn't want to turn around to look at Mac. I could hear him.
They were sweating.
Eyes were sweating.
But I got to tell you, Scott, you know, seeing it, because like I said yesterday, I watched the TED Talk the first time. But seeing the play today, for me, you know, like guys like Brian and I, like you, you know, we kept going back. You know, we'd be home for a year, 6 months, and then we'd be back. And you know, the thing that really, 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 really got me with the play was, you know, it showed the effect it has on. It's not about just you. It's not about your wife. It's the effect that the entire situation has on your relationships, on your life. You know, like you said in there, you know, you knew, well, Danny said in there, he knew combat, but he didn't know how to live, you know? And it was, what I got to tell you from an old guy like me is to see it like that, but to see it unfiltered. You know, I mean, with the curse words in it, it's not sexy. It's real. You know, it's a story you wrote, but I know so many guys that have that story, you know, and to see it play out like that, like it brought back so many emotions to me. Like right now I'm getting emotional, you know, and, you know, like I was telling Brian, I don't know if I told you yesterday, but Like, I have three daughters, a 22-year-old, well, actually, she's 25 now, a 25-year-old, a 27-year-old. But my 27-year-old is almost 28. Yeah, I am old. But my middle daughter, Cassie, when she was in her freshman year of college, she had to write a descriptive essay, and she wrote it, and I didn't really read it until probably 2016, because she never even showed me. And this is, it's probably about the same time I was actually retiring. And she was 8 years old, and I was severely wounded. I was really messed up. I was in Walter Reed, you know, when they got to come see me. And to read it, because I just read it the other day, to see what an 8 year old's view of that was, but to see like this thing she was talking about, how it didn't look like daddy anymore. You know, I could smell the hospital. I could do this. I could do that. And what I love about what you show with the family, with the relationship, is that we're not just the warriors. You know, our entire family is enduring this war, and you know, they suffer just as much as we do. In some cases, if not more, you know. So I just got to tell you, man, it blew me away. Like, I got goose pimples right now. Like, it literally did. Like, I, you know, and like you said, it ain't about being special forces. It ain't about any of that stuff. It's about the situations that we're thrown into as human beings. And, you know, and I got to say this, and I'm sorry for like talking so much, but I got to say what really, you know, other than the family part, what really got me is, you know, when civilians and people that don't know anything about the military, they always talk about veterans, you know, as being the ones with PTS, like they're broken and all this stuff. And it's not about, the PTS is not about what happened to us. It's about what happened to our brothers, you know, and what yours shows is how much pain Danny was carrying all those years, because in his mind, those guys gave everything and he wasn't able to validate why they gave everything, you know? So I thank you for that, man. I needed to see that. That was just amazing.
Scott, you're muted.
Scott, you're muted. Yeah, there we go. I think I'm good now. Mac, thank you, man. That means more to me than you'll ever know for both you guys, because like I sit here in your presence and I look at, you know, between the two of you, you know, the miles that you guys have run and the load that you've carried and right there with your boys every step of the way. And, you know, when I wrote the play and then when I trained to perform it, you know, that was always in my mind. And I never really talked about this, but like, and I don't think I've ever said this, but before every play, you know, I would go in the bathroom after I would throw up. And I would hit my knee, then I would just be like, God, please just don't let me screw this up. Because I know that, you know, guys like you are sitting in the audience and I'd go out there and I'd see some of my guys who are just, you know, severely busted up doing what I asked them to do, you know, and it's just like, please don't let me mess this story up. Let me do it justice. And one of the things that you picked up on that I'm really grateful for, because I feel like you really deserve it, you and Brian both, and so many people listening to this, is, you know, the whole essence of this, of the play, if you were to ask me, like, what's the play about? It's two words, and it's letting go. You know, in the storyline, Danny needs to let go to ascend to Valhalla, right? But metaphorically, really, for all of us who answered the call, you know, we have to let go to do what you said yesterday, Brian or Mac, which is to be happy. Right. I mean, we ran a good race. Like, we did the best we could and we made mistakes and we, you know, and we did good things and bad things. But at the end of the day, you know, we showed up, man. Like, we showed up and we were counted and we did what we were asked to do. And, you know, there's still a life in front of us right now. And in order for us to live it and be of value and be of service, we have to let go. We have to let go of that pain. We have to let go of that guilt. We have to let go of all the things that haunt us. And you know what? It's okay to do that, you know? And that was something I had to figure out. And my only wish for this play is that in that story, you know, that that guys and girls are able to find that, and that they look at that bracelet. You know, I've got people that tell me all the time that we give these bracelets out, by the way, at the play. I'll make sure you guys get yours. Yeah. But that's the, you know, you wear the bracelet when you go in. And what's so cool, man, is like no one knows why they're getting the bracelet when they go to the play.
Yeah.
Right. And then all of a sudden there's this scene where Danny's talking to Lynn. You probably remember it. And they're talking about Caden giving him his silly band, his favorite silly band. And yeah, all of a sudden you can hear it in the audience. Everybody goes, oh, and they're elbowing their wife, you know, and it's like the coolest thing, because you can feel it spreading across the room that everybody understands that, you know, this silly band's much bigger than, you know, just a little prop. And it becomes really a reminder that we all need to let go, whether you served or not, even like this is for civilians. Yeah. We got shit we got to let go of.
Absolutely, brother.
You know, for me though, the last time the silly band shows up in the play is the most like that's where that thing just takes its complete life for me. It is the last time that it shows up. I was having a conversation earlier this morning, you know, with a former battalion commander of mine.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, I mean, we were talking about the play and we were talking about just, you know, everything in general. And he says, you know, his sister called him right before he was ready to make, I think, his fourth deployment to Afghanistan, and was talking about all the stuff that she was going through. And on his end, he's like, look, you're a civilian and you're telling me about your problems. I'm getting ready to leave to go to Afghanistan again. Like, your problems aren't as big as mine. And then I stopped him and I said, you know, while you can say that and you're looking at them as if her problems aren't as big as they are for you right now, or you're not weighing them evenly, everyone goes through something. I don't care whether you're you know, a combat arms MOS, if you're a service and support, if you're law enforcement, I mean, this is a human thing. Like, everyone goes through some sort of trauma.
Yeah.
And it's up to you how you deal with that trauma. You know, you choose to be the victim, if you will, if you let that consume you and become your end all be all.
Yeah.
You've got to be the one that lets it go, just like you're saying. You know, if you hold on to it, that stuff that just weighs you down. And brings negativity into your life, like, let it go, whatever it is. And whether you're a civilian, whether you're a service member, those things that those negative thoughts, like, let them go.
Yeah, for sure. And I will tell you that when we toured, you know, we started out, I was holding on to a lot myself. And so it was, as we toured, we went to 16 cities around the country in 2019. And, you know, it was all volunteers that would raise their hand and say, we'll host it here. We went to like Vermilion, South Dakota, and Brandon, Mississippi. But then we also went to, you know, Chicago and Santa Barbara and New York and New York City. And we just kind of elbowed our way into every room we went into. But what was cool was, as we toured, our team grew, and we ended up with like a 17 person team. And it was all like wounded vets and military family members. Our tour manager lost her husband to suicide. And like, we were just the island of misfit toys in terms of how we rolled out. But what a team it was. And it became just this amazing group of people. But as we toured around, guys, I will tell you a couple of stats that, and this just happened as we went. We started on the wall of honor that's in the play. We had a Gold Star mom in Brandon, Mississippi, contacted us, and she said, would it be okay if I brought something from my son, Jason, who was killed, to put on the wall? And it was his dog tags. And so we brought her up on stage and we honored Jason. And by the time we were done touring, we had honored 28 families, 28 Gold Star families, you know, and brought them up on stage. We did 200. We traveled with our own PTS counselors. We did 200 PTS interventions in the lobby and in adjacent rooms, with non-invasive, non-chemical protocols, and got people started on that. We trained counselors while we were there. And the other thing we did that I was, I was proud of it. And the reason we had a Vietnam veteran, we would always do a talk back after every play. And one of the Vietnam veterans stood up and he was really emotional. And he said, you know, I love this story. I feel like this story speaks to us too. But he goes, honestly, no one remembers who we are anymore. And he just was, God, that guy was hurting so bad. And I just wanted to go give him a big hug. And so after we were done, I told the team, I was like, look, that's not going to happen again. Like these guys, like that is not, this is not about post 9/11 shit. Like this is way bigger than that. So what we would do after every show, we would have the veterans, military family members stand up, then the veterans. And then we would say, would our Vietnam veterans please remain standing? And then we would just say, welcome home. And the room would just erupt, you know, and the looks on their faces. And, you know, guys, it was just, I don't know, you know, it was something I'll never forget it. I'm afraid we'll probably, I don't want to say never, but we probably won't tour again because of just the dynamics of what's happening in the world and the team. We might, but what we decided to do because of COVID was we said 16 cities, we reached 5,000 people, which is great, but we got 22,000 a month coming out of service. Like we got 1 million veterans that have served post 9/11 and over 20 million veterans in the military, 300 million civilians who don't have a clue what our people do. We need to go bigger. And so we decided to make it into a movie. And we had no funding, we had no money, and we still don't. But we found enough, scratched enough together to get, we filmed it, and we've already filmed it, and we are in production right now, and we're going to release this sucker on Memorial Day across the country.
Can't wait, brother. You know, what you said about the Vietnam vets, since I've been retired, I've been able to do a lot of, different events with veterans and all, I've ran across a lot of Vietnam vets, and like to them, and I tell guys out there, man, to them, just us sitting there talking to them, hearing them talk means so much, man. None of us are like the World War II generation. We didn't come home winners, but at least we came home, especially early in the war. You know, everybody, like you said, thank you for your service. Everybody had their flags up, all that stuff. But those guys did, you know. And I tell people all the time, you know, I make jokes and say the longest day is why I wanted to be a paratrooper and everything. But really, I mean, I had, you know, my dad was only 19 when I was born. So he didn't go to Vietnam because I was born in 73. He got drafted, but wound up being inactive reserve or whatever it was back then. But every single, and he had 14 brothers and sisters. I had 7 uncles, and every single one of them, except for my Uncle Keith, all fought in either Vietnam or Korea. And my grandpa was a World War II salvage diver. Mm-hmm. And I remember my one uncle, Uncle Junior, he was a gunny sergeant in Marine Corps in Vietnam, like literally scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But never talked about what he did over there. But all I could see is this dude with a flat top, always had a cigar with these Marine Corps tattoos. He even had like the old, you know, everybody got the old devil tat. Yeah. He had that and he had the, you know, and I just was like, that dude's seen some stuff.
Yeah, man.
But, you know, if I could be my Uncle Junior now, what I would tell a young little Donnie is what they call me. You know, what I would tell him is, dude, you know, you want to do your time, you want to serve your country, you want to do all that, but it doesn't come without a cost and a price.
Oh man.
And it's not sexy like the movies make it out to be.
Exactly.
And that's why, man, like I'm telling you, I love what you're doing. I wanted to show you this. So this little angel, right? It was a little angel keychain.
Yeah.
I can't even read it anymore because it's so small, but basically, so I have a Ziploc bag full of little trinkets my girls gave me for every deployment, right? I still have it in my, out here. I'll show Brian when we get done. But this right here, my daughter Chelsea, my oldest, when I was in OF1, her and my wife were in Walmart. And it was a little keychain, you know, they have a little thing. And she's like, I want to get the angel for daddy. So she got it. They mailed it to me. I got it literally the day before I got blew up. And literally that was in October of 2003. I have carried that thing every day of my life since then. And if it would have been a bracelet, I'll be damned if somebody was going to tell me to take it off.
Absolutely.
But you know, like, and I've had troopers, you know, that I've made exceptions for them with stuff like that. I know you have too, because you get it, you know, you get it. Like, and I don't know, man, it's just, it's so powerful, the symbolism of it, you know, because in their minds, they know you're going to be okay because they did that for you.
Absolutely. You know,
and then but the double-edged sword to that, if something happens to you, then just like we blame ourselves for our brothers, our children are going to blame themselves for us, you know, because what they gave us didn't work.
Yeah. You know, I remember, Mac, when I retired from SF in the Army, it was at MacDill here, and I was in SOCOM, and I'd just come back from my last tour to Afghanistan, and my boys were at the time, I think Cody was like, you know, probably 12, my oldest, and Cooper was like, you know, 11, and then Bray was, you know, 8, and I was all in my regalia, ready to retire, you know, and my blouse, jump boots, and General Scott Miller was there with me, and we were ready to, we were ending this thing, man, and,
you know, American.
Yeah,
he is a great American.
Yes,
he is. And he made it a point to fly down and stand with me at my retirement. I'll never forget that. You know, the whole, had my room just like you guys, full of friends and family and wounded brothers that were still with me. And so we're getting ready to walk in. They're playing the Ballad of the Green Berets for the walk in, you know, and Cooper comes up to me, my middle son, and he's like, "Hey, Dad, can I talk to you for a second?" And I'm like, "Cool, buddy. Yeah, but how about after the ceremony? You know, we're getting ready to start." And he goes, "Okay." And he starts to walk off. And I feel, you know, those laser eyes on you, like some, you, and I turn around and General Miller's like, "You go talk to that boy. We'll wait." And I was like, "Roger, that's our last order I ever took from an Army officer," but I took it. And I grabbed Coop and we went back to the bathroom, you know, where we were away from everybody. And I said, "What's up, man?" And I was a little frustrated with him, you know, and he's like, "Are you done?" And I was like, "Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what this uniform's about here. Like, yeah, I'm done. What are you talking about?" And he goes, "Tell me you're done." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Cooper, I'm done." And he lost it. He buried his head in my chest and just sobbed the tears of a little boy that had held in all those years, the tears that he didn't want his dad to see him upset. And he needed to hear it. And it was in that moment I was like, holy God, like, what has this little guy carried all these years, man? You know?
Yeah.
And it was epiphanal for me, you know, and I never forgot that. And I never have, you know, and that really had a big impact on the play in terms of how I wrote it, because I realized there was so much about what my family endured that I didn't even know. And so I spent a lot of time asking them, like, what was this like for you? And I think they felt safe enough after it was over to really tell me, like, even the scream scene, like, that happened. And I had no idea. I had no idea, you know?
Yeah. So,
you know,
wow.
The last thing I'll say about it is, if people are thinking about, okay, you know, what's this going to do to me? And I think you guys can speak to it. Like, I, you know, what my experience has been, there's four things that happen when the play, and I think the same will be with the movie. One is, if you're a civilian, you're going to be informed about the cost of war like you've never been before. And I think as an American citizen, we all have an inherent obligation to have that level of understanding. Because if we're going to send our men and women to fight, we damn sure better know what we're asking them to do. Like you said, Mac, there's a cost to war. Two, I think that it will validate to every warrior in the room and every military family member the life that you lived. You will see your life on that stage. And I think in some ways it gives it jars you and it fires you up. But there's a lot of safety in it, too, because you're watching your life play out in the safety of the stage. Three, I believe that it heals. I believe that story heals, and I will always believe that story heals. I do not believe that story creates trauma. In fact, the latest neuroscience shows us that story heals the brain. And I firmly believe that this story heals. And four is I believe it connects. You know, I think this thing connects people, families, Democrats, Republicans. It connects us in ways that go way beyond identity. And I just want to throw that out there because I think it's important if people are thinking about watching the movie when it comes out, that's what you can expect, you know, and that has been pretty consistent across the board.
I agree 100%. But I will tell you, be ready, make sure you hydrate because you're going to dehydrate yourself at some point in there because it's going to get to you. It's going to dance on those nerves. You were talking about Cooper and I was just like, you know, I remember back my very first deployment. My oldest was, shoot, I don't even know. I can't even think of, I'd have to go and I don't do math in public, but, I thought that I was just doing the right thing by sitting there talking to this young little child and say, all right, you know, daddy's leaving. You got to be the man of the household. Mm-mm. No. Wrong answer. Like that just puts so much on his poor little shoulders.
Yeah. They have to grow up so fast in that case.
Yeah.
And yeah, I, you know, there's so much, but again, you know, I go back to, you know, look, guys, we did the best we could with what we had, man. You know, the nation was attacked and we kitted up and we went, you know, and the same with Vietnam, the same with Korea, the same with the Cold War, you know, I mean, to me, like part of this whole thing is the recognition that we ran the race we ran and we did the best we could. And we got to give ourselves some grace. We got to give our brothers and our sisters some grace. And I think recognize that the most important thing we can do right now in our life with the time we have left is to let go of that pain and step into the sunlight, man. Like I no one will ever convince me otherwise. I think it's the most important thing we can do.
I think talking about it helps that letting go
so much.
The family dynamic is just for me, that's the biggest piece for me, right? Like we got done with the play when I seen it at Bragg and we were gonna go World of Beer to go eat with you guys and hang out, and my wife and I just sat in the car silent, just driving.
Yeah.
Because I had never experienced her side and
right.
Aim did such an amazing job just yeah. depicting that, you know, on the screen.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my goodness. You know, my wife told me, you know, one of the harshest things that she's ever said to me, was you're being a good provider, but you're not being a good husband.
There you go.
Man, that crippled me when to hear those words, because I didn't know that, you know, I this is my job. I'm going to war. I'm going to do these things. I'm leading my soldiers. You're taking care of the home. Like I don't get it. I don't understand. Like you've got a house, you've got, you know, we've got money, we've got this. I thought I was doing what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
But for her to say that, she didn't say it, you know, to be mean or to, you know, to be hurtful, but it did, because it was true. And I realized it at that point.
Well, you know, with that, it's, I talk about this a lot, is, you know, we were there physically, but our mind was still over there.
Absolutely.
You know, we were still fighting that war, because all we were doing when we were back was thinking about when we're leaving again.
The train.
You know, what did we do wrong last time? What are we going to do better this time? We're doing it over and over in our heads. And we think we're there with the family. You know, we put on a face and all, but they know, you know, they know. And for, you know, for us, and this is another thing that it's hard for civilians who haven't been in this world to understand is, like, when I was in the Army, like, those guys under me were, I was responsible for every single one of them, right, every second of every day, not just 9 to 5, none of that crap, always. And all I could ever think about, and I say this, and it's, you know, and I know it now, all I could ever think about was keeping them safe.
Yeah.
But also at the end of the day, the reason all I could, I think, could think about was keeping them safe was because I was afraid to let my guard down and talk to my family and talk to my friends and let them know, because, dude, I was in so much pain while I was in, but I just sucked it up, you know? Exactly. And yes, we always want to take care of our guys, but in the grand scheme of things, if I could go back in time, and when I was a command sergeant major, I would have talked to guys every day about, hey, dude, if you see some bad shit, talk about it. Yeah. You know, if you feel like crying, dude, come cry to me. I don't give a shit, because I know what you're capable of. Right. You're not a wuss. You're not a, none of that stuff matters, because like I, for 25 years, I didn't cry.
Yeah.
You know, I take that back. I did one time in my tent in the Argonaut. But for the most part, I stuck it back in, and I always said I was doing it for the guys. But in the grand scheme of things, to me, at least, I think I was being selfish as far as like not facing it and carrying it, because I felt like that, like you share with Danny, that guilt was there every day. So I wanted to always feel that pain, you know, every day, every second I breathe, I wanted to feel that pain, because I knew if I was feeling that pain that I wouldn't forget.
And
with that, it hurts those around you.
It does. You know? And it hurts you, you know, I mean, that's the thing too, is that, and the thing is, if you look at how the play is set up, and it's the same in the movie, you know, Danny is stuck, right? He's in purgatory, but purgatory for Danny, which is exactly what you described for you, Mac, is your living room and your firebase.
Yeah.
Right. And you're in between those. That's purgatory. Right. Because when you're in one, you're thinking about the other. And, and we spent 15 years doing that. Right. And that's a serious thing. And then when you come home, if you're not careful, you never leave that place. You're still stuck in between those two worlds. And that's a really shitty place to be as a human being, stuck between two worlds. And that, again, that whole let go piece, I think, is absolutely, you know, necessary to do that. And the other thing, Mac, that I think that you said that was really profound is the emotional part. And I just want to speak to that for a second. And I really hope that everybody watching this and listening to this will really hear me. Is in my job, what I do every single day is I still teach Green Berets who are candidates to go through the Q course, who have to go into these low trust areas and connect. I teach CEOs and leaders, and they have to lead lots of people, and I teach federal law enforcement. And so I do a ton of research on neuroscience and what it is that makes a human being tick in high stakes moments, right? Like, what do people follow? What do they connect to? And one thing that I've learned through a lot of recent data is that humans are emotional creatures, man. We actually navigate the world emotionally. We're wired as the most emotional creatures on the planet. And the reason is because when that emotions are nothing more than a chemical manifestation in your body to demand an action. Right. So if you are threatened, you get angry so you can fight. If the threat becomes too big, you get afraid so you can run. It's primal. And we live in this transactional world where we're actually trained opposite of that, where you take the emotions, which is the essence of the limbic brain, the mammal brain, and you press it down. And if you think about that just in terms of science, like, what you're doing is basically taking yourself out of the fight. You are because you can't connect to other humans, right?
True.
And so what we learned in the play, this is what was crazy, was my acting coach in New York City. He told me, he said, look, Scott, I love the play, but I've watched you, because I had to learn how to act at 50. You talk about a midlife crisis. but he's like, if you're going to do this play, man, like where the audience will actually do something besides feel sorry for you, right? If you want to keep it from something other than just a trauma fest in front of everybody around you, if you want them to feel what you feel, you're going to have to go opposite of everything you've been trained in your life.
Yes.
You know, and that's where AIM was so brilliant. She was like, you guys are used to putting armor on. You got to unzip all of it and step right out there with complete access to your emotions. And I think personally, what I've learned through this experience, if I could say one thing that I've learned about me, is that that emotional access changed my life. It's not about dumping or therapy, but having access to my emotions and not editing them in the presence of somebody else because I'm worried about, like, I don't do that anymore. And man, you talk about something that changed the way I navigate the world and see the world. It was a game changer. And I think that that's why I work so hard on storytelling with veterans. It's about, the story is important, but it's about, do you have access to your emotions? Because guess what? You deserve to, you know,
yeah.
And what we're wired to do naturally, man. Like it's not artificial. It's essential.
And you're 100% correct. Cause I mean, you know, like I remember talking to my psychologist and she was talking about how, you know, I was this big tough guy and everything else, but she's like, you know, if you could just unlock that a little bit and just open up your body armor and just feel for a second, she's like, it'll change your perspective on everything. And when I was able to actually do that, like, I ain't gonna lie, I bawled my eyes out, you know, but it felt so good. You know, like it felt like, I don't know, it was like so euphoric because it was almost like a weight was lifted off. And then I had a lot more to go through, obviously a lot rougher times, you know, telling stories and stuff. But what it showed me was, you know, me, the guy that I am now, just like you, sir, just like Brian, is if I still want to take care of my troops, if I still want to be, you know, that happy old guy, then I got to be me. I have to be true to myself, but I have to learn how to feel and not feel because I think this is what I'm supposed to do, but feel how I should feel about what's going on with me and what's going on around me. And to be able to, like you're saying, sir, to just open up and talk and be open and transparent, it feels almost like to me that, you know, as part of me still going to be a war always for the rest of my life, just like all of us.
Absolutely.
But it almost feels to me like, you know, everything that we did, everything we went through, you know, it led me to this point. And now that I'm able to face it, in the grand scheme of things, it made me a better person, you know, if that makes sense to you, because it made me understand. And now that I can talk about it and have those emotions, that I understand what suffering is. I understand what friendship is. I understand, I truly understand what love is.
Yeah.
And to be able to actually feel those, because I don't know about you guys and people out there, but for so many years, you know, I put on the face, but I felt nothing except for anger and guilt, really, you know, and to be able to do that, you know, it changes everything. And to be able to see, for me to be able to see that today, to see what you're doing on stage, you know, you're playing a character that you wrote, but you're a lieutenant colonel, you know, showing people this is what it's like. And guess what? There's no shame in letting that pain go. There's no shame in talking about it, because we did what we were asked to do, you know, for our whole adult lives. I mean, between the three of us, we probably got 75, 80 years of service, you know, but our whole adult lives, we served something bigger than ourselves. And now that we've transitioned, we have to figure out how to serve ourselves.
That's right.
And it sounds selfish, but to me, the only way now I understand how to truly serve my family and my friends and everything else is I have to think about me first. And what I mean by that is I have to be the guy that I want to be, because if I'm the guy I want to be, then they're going to want to be a part of my life.
That's, you know, it, man.
But if I'm not, if I'm that guy that everybody thinks I should be, then all I'm doing is the same thing I did before, is I have that facade on, but it's not me.
I think one of the most dangerous things we can do in our life, particularly as we come home from service, is to be what we think everyone wants us to be. You know,
yes, sir.
I really do. I think it's one of the most dangerous things we can do. And it's understandable why it happens, because it's like changing planets. You're going from this world where, like in the 82nd or Ranger Battalion or SF or, you know, whatever unit you were in, that's a tribal honor-based society. It's no different than the old tribes. It's no different than the Spartans, right?
Sure, yeah.
There's a code of honor and tribalism that goes with that. It's group identity. It's once you're in it, like you understand it. But then when you come home to a world that is transactional, materialistic, individualism reigns, right? I mean, all of that makes it very, so you try to fit into something that like is not your skin, you know? And the problem with that is that I believe when you do that, it elevates your anxiety. It puts you in this sympathetic state, right? So humans, we are either in a sympathetic state or a parasympathetic state. We go in a sympathetic state when cortisol jacks up, anxiety jacks up, adrenaline jacks up, and we either got to fight or run. And we lived a lot of our life in that place, right? But there's also the rest of our body is a parasympathetic state, where that's the calm and connect part after we hunt the tiger or we kill the enemy or we run from the foe. There's a parasympathetic response where the body metabolizes that shit and has an emotional response, right? Where you metabolize. Well, guess what? We never did that. We didn't do any metabolizing of all that trauma. And so what do? You just push it down, push it down, push it down. And then all of a sudden you come home to this new planet, right? And everything around you is foreign and different. And you just keep clicking up, clicking up, clicking up, clicking up. And you're in that sympathetic state all the time now. And the problem with that is you're not connected to your emotions. You're not breathing. You're holding your breath all the time. And you look like you don't trust yourself. And when you look like you don't trust yourself, no one else is going to trust you either. And then you start to isolate and spiral. And that's the devil's cocktail, man.
So true,
and,
sir.
And where you're going with that, you know, we've got service members who, you know, whether you're doing 3 years, 5 years, 10, 20, 30, you transition out from the service and you disconnect from
yes.
Anyone and everyone who understands what you've gone through and what you do on a day-to-day basis. They don't speak this, you know, the people don't speak your same language wherever you go back to. And that's horrible. That's a horrible place to put yourself in. But you've got to be able to talk. You've got to be able to keep those buddies around to be able
I would say is, like, when you watch the play, you know, Danny has that nightmare scene. When the movie comes out, you'll see there's a nightmare. And I think what I would say is that whatever it is that you're feeling as you try to figure out which planet you're on and what's going on in your life, whatever it is you're feeling, please understand that you're not crazy. Like, that's the truth. That's the truth. There is the way that trauma manifests in the brain. It creates a circuit that just keeps running. And until the brain can reset that trauma, right? It's just it's an endless loop. It's like a storm and it can't stop. And so what you're feeling, you're not crazy. It's actually an injury. It's not even an illness.
Right. Yeah.
It's not even an illness. It's an injury that actually can be, in most cases, overcome.
Sure. And we don't need to look at PTS like it's diabetes or like it's you know something along those lines. Like,
no,
talk about it. You will start to heal. I mean, whether that's talking to counselors. I mean, there's tons of stuff out there.
If I'll say it right here. If you're dealing with trauma. Scott at rooftopleadership.com. Send me an email. We travel with a ton of trauma counselors. I've done tons of alternate protocols. There are some wonderful things out there that are non-invasive, non-chemical. There are lots of alternatives that are available and it's game changing. And we're not talking about it enough. It's stuff that's outside the VA, but it's there and it's really useful. And I think as a community, particularly a veteran community, if we really want to stop this just ridiculous rampant rate of suicide, depression, and antisocialization, we've got to start talking more about mental health, mental resilience, suicide, and most of all, trauma. I don't think that we're talking about trauma and some of the new stuff that's out there. It's really good news. It is really good news for our guys and girls. And that's another thing that we're going for with this play is, this play's not going to fix anything, but what I do believe it will do is it will provide airspeed and doors opening for conversations like we're having right now.
And that's spark. It's that spark to start that fire.
Yeah. It kind of takes that edge and it's like, all right, I need to look at this, just for me, just watching it, seriously, like I had three situations straight up that came up in my head, that I remember vividly that I went through that right there, it sparked a memory for me that I had forgot that was even there. But it's something that, like you said, it opened the door and now I need to talk about it, you have everything in that play. You've got the medevac, you've got the family, you've got the anger, you've got the guilt, you've got the love, where I think we as a community, where I think, and this is for me, where I think we're failing as a veteran community is us as senior leaders are not talking about this enough, And just watching that, even though I've been working on things for years now, since I've been retired, there were three things that came up that I had totally forgotten about that are still there that I still need to talk about, that I still need to address. And there's so much baggage and weight there. But like I say every day is it doesn't have to consume you.
No,
you can own it. You have to. And like you said, the play is not going to fix anything. Just like if I give you a counselor, they're not going to fix anything if you're not willing to open up for you and accept it that, hey, this is for you and this is something you need to do. And if you watch the play and you see what Danny has been through, but you see his family, you see the importance of, like you said, letting go, but even more, and it's kind of like my buddy Rudy Reyes said, and it sounds weird, but after all that's said and done, you need to be a little self-centered. And by that, I say you need to forgive yourself, and what that can show, what that play shows you is that it's okay to forgive yourself.
Yeah.
It's okay to let go. It's okay to feel that and to understand that, yes, they're not here anymore. But me being angry or the guilt that I have or any of that stuff, and I'm putting it all on myself, is not going to do anything to change anything. So why not do something for me that ultimately my buddies, my brothers, everybody that isn't here anymore would want me to do, you know, because I think for me, everything I've dealt with for the most part is self-inflicted. And what I mean by that is just like Daniel, you know, instead of facing the reality of the hurt and the pain, I use it as anger, and I'm going to be a better freaking instrument, and I'm going to be a better this guy, and I'm going to freaking kick ass, and I'm going to keep these dudes going. But I never faced it. You know, I never faced my guilt, my pain. And I had to finally look for that forgiveness. And that forgiveness for me was letting go and forgiving myself. And I'll tell you guys, at least for me, you know, I didn't truly understand, you know, how much pain and guilt I would have until I was a first sergeant, you know, until I had 130 some odd guys under my control. And, you know, they go through literal hell and we come back, and just like everything else, the green machine's got to keep rolling. So guys get out. They think the world's going to be better. Guys do whatever, blah, blah, blah. They go to other units, they do whatever. But what I'm trying to say with this long little rant is what your play shows is for those guys who are leaders like me, like you, like Brian, you know, for 8-9 years, I literally couldn't even face any of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know how. Because of the losses we had, because of the pain, because of how much of an asshole I was to him. Now, in the grand scheme of things, I was being that guy because I actually gave a shit and I didn't want anything to happen to him, no matter what, you know, and you know, no matter how good you are, bad things are going to happen. But at the same time, when I was deployed with those guys, I put myself in situations like Danny did, that were very unnecessary. And the reason I did that was because, and I understand it now, was I was truly scared to face what was going on in my head. And to acknowledge that scar, but give it time to heal.
Yeah,
you
man.
Know, if that makes sense to you. I mean,
it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's
so good, man. There's so much in what you just said. And I think that, you know, you said that key word, which is like, rather than like lead with that scar and repurpose that struggle in, you know, in a different way, like we try to just kind of like press it down and put ourselves. And I think the same is true when we come home, we put ourselves in positions that we know they're not the right positions to put ourselves in, but yet we do because we just can't sit in the alternative. But here's what I would share with you is like, and I think this is also, I think it's good news for us as veterans and military family members and first responders too, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Is anger is a secondary emotion. It's a default emotion, right? Like anger is not the primary emotion. It's usually fear is primary. And then the thing is, everything always defaults to anger. That's the problem. If we isolate, if we pull back from the world, if we remove ourselves, it's always going to go to anger. And the problem with that is when it goes to anger, then that becomes like a primal tribal manifestation where we go into a trance, man. You go into, you know, anger, you go into a trance-like survival state. You're, you know, all your cortisol and your adrenaline jack up and you're doing what you have to do to survive. You're not thriving, you know, and that's what I would say to what you just said is so critical is it's predictable. If we allow ourselves to not do what we're talking about here, it's guaranteed it's going to go to anger. And when you combine that with trauma and guilt, it is the devil's cocktail, man. And the angel's cocktail is the opposite of that. It is connection. It is emotional access. It is breathing, not holding your breath and just doing big belly breaths. You know, it's that. And it's storytelling. Like, it's really just connecting and allowing yourself to do that. That's the opposite of that. And it feels weird. It almost feels counterintuitive because it's everything we've been trained not to do. But exactly. But if we don't develop those skills as we come home, and if we don't help our brothers and sisters develop those skills, the outcome, unfortunately, is very predictable. And we've already seen it for years.
I got to go back. I'm not a doctor or anything, but maybe my wife's broke, because I'm pretty sure anger is her very first emotion for whatever. I'm joking on that. You know, you were just talking about it, though. You've got to have that connection. If you're in a helicopter and that helicopter goes down and everyone dies but you, you've got to fight. You can't just give up, right?
Yeah.
You know that while you're there and you're fighting, that your network of people, the QRF is coming. They're sending B-52s. They're sending everything to come and get you, but you've got to fight. If you just sit there and set your weapon down and you give up, you're done.
Well, it's like you just said, you have to fight, but the key word is you have to fight. And you have your brothers and your sisters there to support you 100% of the way, but they can't do it for you. They can't, like I said, you know, if I'm on the objective and there's a bad guy right in front of me, I can't wait for you to fight that fight for me.
Yeah.
I have to face that enemy. I know you're going to be right behind me to make sure if anything else comes up, you're going to kick its ass.
Well,
and that's the way I kind of look at it, is I have to face that demon that's affecting me. I have to face him myself, but I know that if any of his buddies or if he has anything that comes up, that I got my support, my fire element back there ready to freaking pounce, you know? And that's what you're saying with connectivity. We have to stay connected.
Did you just caveat up what the Sergeant Major said?
What Sergeant Major? Oh, to caveat what the Sergeant Major said. Yeah, I get it.
Oh, yeah.
That's old school right there.
That's probably an insider there. Yeah, but, you know, what I would – you know what I would say to that, Mac, is that, and this is something that we're going to do with the movie, and I'd love to like just lay it on you guys and get your thoughts on it. But when the movie comes out, one of the things we're going to do is we're asking people around the country, you know, how when we traveled with the tour, we would ask people to host the tour. So like in Fort Bragg, Carrie Ellis hosted it and she got the rooms and she sold the tickets and that kind of thing. And we did this in every city we want to, but what we're looking at for the plays release, we want this thing to be bigger than Thank You for Your Service. We want it to be where, you know, which is, you know, it's a solid movie, but I think it's time that we get beyond this, that veterans are broken. We just got to get past that. And the idea of this movie is to help people understand, yes, there's a cost of war. Yes, there are scars, but veterans and their family members are some of the most high performing people on the planet. And the more we understand them and what they've been through, the more we can leverage their innate talent here at home right now, which we need more than ever.
Absolutely. That's the perfect way to put it.
What we're asking is, when this thing comes out, man, I really would love to get 1 million viewers around the country, if not more. And I think we can. Bryant, Sergeant Major, keeps telling me we got to go higher. But I really think we can. And what I want to do, and what we've already started, we've got 20 so far, is we're asking for people to be virtual hosts. And the virtual host is basically what you do is, and we're calling it a say their name watch party. But around Memorial Day, you know, host a watch party, and it can be virtual, but it can be brick and mortar. But we're going to have all these different nodes all over the country. And when the play comes out, the movie comes out, you know, locally, people would be watching it together, like you talked about, with your brothers and your sisters, but on the Zoom call. And then we do a talk back. You do local talk backs where, you know, you talk about the folks that you lost. You let people say their piece, because there's no way we could do a talk back centrally with this kind of release, but we can do them in a distributed way and then have everybody kind of on at the same time doing that. And I think it could be really powerful. And I believe that we could do a lot of the things y'all are talking about, which is reminding these guys that they're not alone, reminding them that there's help out there. But I'd like to like do the movie and then get out of the way and let these virtual hosts and talkbacks do what they do at a community level. And I just want to get y'all's thoughts on that. I'd love you guys to host one.
I think that's amazing. Yeah, I would definitely. Yeah, that's amazing, because it would, depending on the audience, it would spark so many conversations, so much emotion, and it would get, like, I wouldn't say closure, but people, even if they're not veterans, being there to watch it would open up and talk. I mean, hell, for me, you know, I've got some civilian friends now who are rock stars and stuff like that. And for them to say, you know, I truly want to understand what you went through, but I don't, you know, I can never understand that. To have a forum like that, to have us talking with them real unfiltered, this is us and this is you, but at the end of the day, we're all human beings, and that's what this story is all about. It's about letting go. It's about forgiveness. It's about moving on. And dude, yeah, I love it. I think it would be, holy hell, it'd be awesome.
And yeah, Scott,
go ahead, Brian.
Scott, the nonprofit that I work for, I'm already in thought process of how we create this as a program to continue, not just Memorial Day on its launch, right? But how do we get this into a resiliency program for service members to watch it and talk about it? And I think that's the greatest thing that we can do.
And let me just build on that real quick, because I think you guys will be super excited about this, because this gets to what y'all are doing and where we can continue to work together. All of the proceeds, like, I'm not making any money on this thing. Like, the actors get paid, but Monty, my wife and I, you know, that founded the nonprofit, we're not making a dime. All of the proceeds go back in from the ticket sales for the movie. They're going to go back into our nonprofit, The Hero's Journey, and we're going to open up in 2021 called Better Ground Veterans Performing Arts Center. And what's so exciting about that, it's going to be down in Tampa, but it's going to be a national gathering place for veterans. Now think about all the talented veterans we have out there to come and do story jams, to put plays up, to perform music. How many veterans do we know that are just amazing musicians? And we've met so many talent. We're going to have songwriting classes, playwriting classes, acting classes. I'm going to personally teach the same storytelling course that I teach in corporate America to Fortune 100 leaders, so that veterans can have that tool in transition. We're going to have virtual courses on storytelling, and of course the play, where we'll put this thing out there in different forms like Brian's talking about, and then we can come in behind it and do storytelling workshops on, okay, now how do we get your story into the world and help you work through that narrative with, you know, counselors on hand, that in case there's trauma that comes up, we can manage it responsibly. So there's going to be a lot of good that's going to come on the back end of this thing, man. And I think we'll, you know, and the other nonprofits that are working with it as well, it'll open up doors for them to have conversations around PTS and other things. So I'm excited, like you said, Brian, for what happens after the play as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm fired up from the first time, you know, when you announced that you were going to shoot the movie, man, I was just super excited. I was super excited whenever the play went to Fox Nation for people to stream. And for anybody out there listening and watching right now, they can go on Fox Nation and see the play. And that one's shot as a play.
Yeah.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but the new one is shot more like they did Hamilton when they released Hamilton on Disney Plus.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you're exactly right. So if you watch it on Fox Nation, you'll see it performed as we performed it at Fort Bragg, in the Coliseum there. But it was not to camera. Right. So it'll get you. But the one we're doing now that we just shot is directly to camera. And so the way to think about it is it's not a low budget film. What it is kind of a high end stage production shot to camera. Three cameras. We've got a boom camera. So like it's very dynamic and moving, but it's a stage production. The other thing that even if you've seen the play and even if you watch it on Fox Nation and you guys are going to let, we have a new ending, right? There's a new ending now that is not what you saw. And it's a new ending that I've been working on for almost 2 years. We did not get to get it in the play because of COVID, but we just shot it. And when we were finished shooting it, like all the camera guys were bawling, man. Like they were a wreck. And it's powerful.
Have, I have no insider information, but inside my brain, because I was watching it again for the second time, right? So in my brain, I thought of an alternate ending, and I won't even say anything. I'm going to call you later just to see if I've got it figured out. Already.
Yeah, call me and I'll tell you. But if you've seen the play, even if you've seen it 10 times, you have not seen the ending, and it will right between the running lights. Yeah.
If you don't mind, Max. So, you're still needing funding.
Yeah.
Right? And so how can anybody who is seen this, heard what we're doing, today, how can they help assist you?
I appreciate that. So here's two ways that you can. One, you can just go right to our GoFundMe page. And I will get you the link to put in the show notes here, Mac.
Yeah.
And rather than try to recite it, it's a GoFundMe page, and it directly funds the play and the Performing Arts Center that we're building, right? And it's costing us around, $250K to put this thing into a movie. And again, we're funding the entire thing ourselves. And to the best I can tell, this is the first time that a play about modern war, written and performed by veterans and military family members, and then turned into a movie and funded by military supporters, has ever been done. Like, I don't think, the whole thing's, it's pretty historical. We're pretty excited. So that's one way, is just go to the GoFundMe site and I'll send the link to Mac. The other one is, if you'd like to be a virtual host, I think this is really exciting. If you want to get involved, like with your community, and you want to, we're having, again, our ask for virtual hosts is very simple. We ask that you raise $5,000 in your local area, that is donated to the Hero's Journey in the play and the Performing Arts Center, that you help spread the word organically through your social network as we push out information, because we want 1 million people to watch this. And then number three is that you host a virtual watch party on Memorial Day. We're calling it a Say Their Name watch party, where you can honor the Gold Star families and the fallen in your tribe. And on your own terms. And those are the three things that, the three ways that the virtual host. So either donate to the GoFundMe page, or reach back out to me, scott@rooftopleadership.com, or out to Brian or Mac, and let them know that you'd like to be a host, and we'll get you connected with Carrie, our host team lead, and you can do it that way.
That's awesome.
That's amazing. And Scott, I just recently did a movie. I'm involved with the Veterans Film and Movies and all, I definitely want to get you and Steven linked up. I think it'd be pretty awesome. But I'm also working another avenue with an organization called Heart Support. They originally started, it wasn't a veterans project. It was mental health for civilians, rock stars, stuff like that. But we started a coalition of veterans, and we're calling it Heart Support Vets. And you can check it out on heartsupportvets.com. But with what Heart Support Vets is trying to do, I would love to link you up with Dave, their executive officer. He's an old artillery guy. Yeah. But to host a watch party at the Your Life Gym at the Heart Support headquarters, I think would be amazing. Yeah. And I think that's something that we could do, because, like I said, I'm a coalition member, but it would also be awesome, to get. And the idea behind it is, if you look at the website, is we want veterans like us, not they, but we want veterans like us out there to tell our story, to get people to start talking, because there are so many organizations out there, like we said, that throw all these things at you, all the mental health stuff and all that stuff. But where are the organizations like yours that are getting guys to talk? Just come up and talk, man.
Yeah.
It ain't about a hunting trip. It ain't about it. Just freaking come hang out, And if we, as the coalition members, tell our stories and talk about vignettes and talk about things, then ultimately, I think it's kind of like with the play, it gets people to open up more, and it gets more people to get away from that stigma that nobody's going to understand. Nobody knows what I've been through, I really, like I said, when we're, I definitely want to link you up with Dave. He's awesome. And if you check out Heart Support, you'll see what I'm talking about. They have Heart Support Vets. It's pretty awesome. It's in the infancy phase right now, But what's great about it, like I said, is they're building a coalition of veterans to go out and talk to people, not speeches, none of that stuff, just like this virtual saying, you know, like I was there in Pennsylvania and I talked for, you know, it was originally going to be a 5-minute video. They let it go for an hour.
Really?
Because the conversation, but I'm saying the conversation and the story, the questions that Dave asked and the stuff that came out was so real, you know. And I'm at that point in my life to where I'm not going to filter it. I'm not going to, you know, and I think that's so amazing. And like I said, yesterday I checked out the hero's journey and all that stuff. And, you know, I followed you on Instagram and
that's awesome.
I love it, man. I love everything you're doing. And from an old senior NCO, if we had more officers out there like you right now, sir, we'd be a lot better off. So I can't thank you enough for what you're doing. Like it means a lot to an old dude like me who feels like Danny sometimes, you know what I mean? So it's awesome. Thank you.
I appreciate it, Mac. And the only reason is because I had some damn good NCOs like you boys squaring my ass away when I was a young lieutenant, keeping me straight and to be able to tell, all the movies are about officers. And I don't think that there's an honest rendering of the evolution of a sergeant in modern war. And that was another goal of mine, was to tell this story through the lens of an NCO. I interviewed, even though I'd been around NCOs my whole life and SF is primarily an NCO organization, I interviewed specifically a whole host of team sergeants and about this role, and just because I wanted to get it right. And so I appreciate you saying that means actually more than, you know. And the other thing I would love to, as we close this out, I'm sure is, I'd love to get like Rudy, I know Rudy not as well as you do, but great guy, and Nate and some of these other guys, I'd love to get them energized about it as well, to whatever degree they want to get involved. Cause I think they are such great influencers and such great role models like you and Brian. Good Lord, we need some role models in this country, and not just for our veterans either, but I mean, just for the general population, man. Like, we need some role models that show what leadership looks like and authenticity looks like and relatability. And you guys are that, man. And they are that. And anything that this movie can do to help illuminate the Danny Pattons of the world, and that we need, man, we need Danny Patton at home.
Yeah, we do.
We need Lynn at home. We need his son Caden at home. Like they went through things that our citizenry are going through to some degree now, right? And it's new ground, and it's scary, and people don't know how to get through it. And our veteran population does, you know. And rather than us sit around and talk about back when it was hard and how nobody understands us, let's kid up and get back in the damn arena and lead our country through this shit. Right.
There you go.
You know, anyway, it's just been a real honor, Mac and Brian. I'm very, very humbled to be here with you.
Well, we're like I said, I can't thank you enough for doing this with us, sir. I think one, people see in the play, if they haven't seen it, it's gonna change their outlook on a lot of things. Two, just hearing, look what you have right here. You have a retired Lieutenant Colonel, Special Forces combat veteran, with two command sergeants majors from the 82nd Airborne Division, combat veterans, talking about mental health, talking about being transparent, talking about forgiveness, talking about letting go. Like, this is, to me, if I was that kid getting out 10 years ago, this, I would crave this. Like, this would change my whole outlook on everything, because in the grand scheme of things, I mean, guys look up to us, and they, you know, when we were in the military, they emulated us. They wanted to be like us, just like we wanted to be like the ones before us. And what you're showing is that you can still be the example, even though you're retired. And it's not about being the CEO of some Fortune 500 company. It's not about being the command sergeant major of range control, retired. I'm still the sergeant major. It's not about any of that. It's about, we have this life experience And yes, we may have served in different capacities than you younger guys and gals, but we all deal with the same demons.
That's right.
And if we can show them as a collective on our level that it's okay. It's okay to have to work on yourself. It's okay to have something going on up here that you need to fix. Nobody's going to judge you. It ain't about that. And that's what, like I said, that's why I started Max Man Cave, because in the hopes that, you know, maybe one person would listen to it and it would change something. And I have to say it, but my brother, Stephen Graham, writer, director, actor, he was the one that really pushed me to start Max Man Cave, because he even said it as a civilian, and he's around the military population. He's like, there are no guys out there like you talking to these guys. And he researched it, and he's right. There's not many guys like us out here talking like we're talking right now.
Yeah.
And we need to get more.
It's funny you say that, Matt, because it was Bo Eason, a civilian, that told me I needed to write a play. And you know what I said to him? I said, Green Berets don't write plays, Bo. And he goes, yeah, that's the problem.
Truth. Yeah, exactly. That's the problem, is we fit into that, you know, just like us as sergeants majors, you know, we were that guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, people look at me now and they're like, holy shit, Sergeant Major Max got a beard, freaking mohawk, earrings. It's like, yeah, because guess what? I was CSM Mac. Now I'm CSM retired Mac. So I'm just Mac. And I'm here, you know, trying to live for me in hopes that you guys out there will see it and live for yourself. And like I said, sir, thank you so much. I could talk all night about this, because this is amazing, but I want to turn it over to Brian here, since he put this together. I was going to say, and this guy, like I said, I've known him like forever, and you know, I love him. We chewed a lot of the same dirt, and we actually do, you know, even though we're retired, we still are there and we still care. And that's why I'm thankful for you for putting this together, man. No, this means a lot, brother.
I thank you for creating Max Man Cave and giving us the platform to be able to, you know, me to link you up with Scott and show you the play. I mean, I knew it was going to be impactful. Scott, you know, thanks so much for writing the play and just being out there talking about it. And anybody listening to this podcast or watching this podcast, I challenge you, man. I challenge you to share it. And this isn't about likes or anything like that. This is about get the word out. Yeah. Like, tell your friends about this play. Tell your friends about the movie that's coming out. If you can, if you're in a position to, you know, host, do it. I'm telling you, it's going to fire you up. It lights that fire like nobody's business. And it's healing. It is so healing.
I guarantee you. I'm sorry, but I need to cut you off, but I just want to build on one thing you said, and I'll throw it back to you. But I guarantee you, if you host a watch party, there'll be at least one person in that watch party that you'll pull out of the abyss, and you may not even know it. I guarantee it happens every time.
Yeah. One person, you know, we talk about wanting to on your Facebook or whatever, you're scrolling up and you see somebody doing 22 pushups. Like, is doing 22 pushups going to help them? It brings awareness, but talking about it's really going to start helping people, and not taking anything away from that challenge. No, but it brings
we're all aware, but where's the action?
Like, don't talk about it. I've got a class 64 Sergeant Major Academy buddy who, Garrett Griffin, says, don't talk about it, be about it. And I think he runs a podcast. So I'm going to challenge him to put this on his and start talking about it and just help everybody heal.
Yeah. And if I could say one last thing, guys, is if you know anybody who is in crisis, you know, a veteran, a family member, a first responder, you know, first thing is you got to call. Man, that suicide hotline's no joke. Like, you got to call. Like, don't, you know, if they're in crisis, like, if you think they're imminent, you got to take action. If you just think, if they're stuck, if you're noticing behavior that doesn't look right, or you're just worried, reach out. You know, honestly, Scott@rooftopleadership.com. Send me an email and I'll get Operation Angel Wing or one of these nonprofits that we work with, which, by the way, Mac, you should have them on. They are friggin' amazing, dude. I mean, they will open people's eyes to trauma and the relief and healing they bring just through understanding. Their former first responder, Mary Millsaps, and former special operator, Zeke Vanderpool, like, amazing. But my point is, if you see somebody that's suffering, whether they're in crisis or whether it just doesn't look right, reach out and it just send me an email and I'll get you connected to somebody. We're losing too many and we got to stop. Like, we got it. We really got to intervene. We cannot sit on the sidelines any longer.
No, man. It's so much pain, you know. Like, 2 weeks ago, I buried one of my brothers.
Yeah.
You know, that lost his battle to his demons just 2 weeks ago. But I'm saying it's not stopping. And I would caveat to what you're saying, you know, we tell guys to reach out to us all the time, and some do. But what I would challenge the people out there who are in a good place, reach out to your buddies you haven't talked to in a long time. Amen. You know, if you see them on Facebook and they pop up, shoot them a message. Say, what's up, man? Say, how you doing? You know, because that might be the one, like you said, sir, that's in that abyss, and just hearing from you may pull them out, you know. So, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, Brian. I didn't mean to cut you off there, bro.
No, you're good, man. Like Matt was saying, hey, stay connected. Reach out. If you're struggling, you need help, call somebody. Call me. Call Matt. You got Scott's information. There are tons of people out there that would love to listen to your problems and what you're going through than to attend your funeral any day of the week.
Yes. And when I post this, I'll have even on the website, I'll put your links and stuff on there. Yeah. You know, it's like you said, sir, it's about connectivity. It's about us coming together. And
right on.
And this right now for me today was good for me. You know, it's every time we do this, it's self-discovery, if that makes sense. You know, so
it does.
I'm sure tonight my phone is going to ring from Mac after he has, because he had no time to process from the time we finished. We went outside for about 5 minutes and then right back in ready to go. And so I'm sure as he runs through things tonight, you know, I talked about it last night, but I think, you know, after you've had a chance to process this a little bit, that you get Diane to watch it.
And
my wife, and we bring them back on into a Max man cave and let them tell it from their side.
Yeah. And I had even talked about trying to get all my daughters one time, but only one of them so far will agree to it because they're shy. But I want to get them on here with me to talk about what it's like being that kid growing up, you know, because now they're older and they get it now, but, you know, how do you process that when you're a 5-year-old kid or 8-year-old kid now? So we forget about them a lot, and I love the fact in the play that we don't. So, but with that said, sir, like I said, I guess we'll close this out. I just, I can't thank you enough. And like I said, I'll send you everything. Anybody out there, and I say this all the time, who thinks, you know, they have something real to say and truly are transparent and want to talk to people, hit me up and we'll do this, you know, because that's what it's about.
Yeah. And if you got something you're writing, send it to me. Like, reach out to Mac or Brian or me, and people send me plays all the time now. It's kind of cool, man. I didn't know we had so many playwrights in the veteran community, but boy, we got a bunch and they're writing some stuff, man. I mean, I can't wait to get the Performing Arts Center open and get these guys, get their plays up because they're beautiful. But yeah, and you guys stay in touch. We'll keep posting. We'll keep you posted on, you know, the development of the movie and all that, and what platforms it's going to be on. Right now, we're looking at Amazon Prime and Vimeo and several. So I'll keep you guys plugged in, and hopefully, maybe if you don't mind, just connecting me to any influencers in your tribe that want to get behind it, and we'll just keep it going, man. We'll just prove everybody wrong.
Oh, absolutely, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you much again. Have a good one, sir. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep kicking ass daily. And, you know, like we always say, don't quit. Keep pushing.
That's it, man. Appreciate you guys.